Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, November 26th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMED. In tonight's news, Eureka nonprofit Sorrow Leaf Healing Center awarded $100,000 grant from PG&E Corporation Foundation. The City of Eureka warns residents and businesses to stay aware of email scams with fraudulent invoices. Central del Pueblo is hosting a demonstration on Thanksgiving in protest of detention centers and family separation. Stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
PG&E Corporation Foundation announced it was awarded $100,000 to Eureka nonprofit Sorrel Leaf Healing Center through their Better Together Nature Positive Innovation Grant Program. Nat Cardos reports.
Eureka nonprofit Sorrel Leaf Healing Center was recently awarded a $100,000 grant from the PG&E Corporation Foundation through their Better Together Nature Positive Innovation Grant Program. Sorrel Leaf Healing Center is a children's crisis residential program that is being built in Eureka to provide mental health care and clinical psychiatry for youths aged 7 to 17. While currently not accepting referrals, they are working on building a farm-based crisis residential treatment facility, as well as a mobile crisis response team, intensive aftercare and family support program, and more. KMA News spoke to Shireen Varga, Executive Director of Sorrel Leaf Healing Center, for more about what they do.
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit that is here in Humboldt County, and we are opening our Children's Crisis Residential Program with the CCRP, first of its kind, as well as we will have three programs, basically, for clinical services. One is the mobile crisis response, to be able to provide therapy in the home and crisis intervention in the home and in the field for 3 to 6 weeks to any youth that are experiencing suicidal ideation, self-harm, depression, anxiety, and so forth. And then we are opening our Children's Crisis Residential Program and Center in the fall of 2026 that will provide gap in services that we currently have. When a youth 7 to 17 is experiencing thoughts of suicide, they meet medical necessity, and normally they would be, you know, sitting around in a hospital room waiting for a bed for days, or being shipped off to Santa Rosa, San Francisco, to a very cold clinical lockdown facility. And so instead, ours is a very much a healing center where we will have an average stay of 2 to 10 days. They'll be assessed every day for making sure that they still need services, and they'll have access to talk therapy, art therapy, music, movement, culture. We're working with our cultural on that community connection, that land as well. Beautiful courtyard, give it their hairdy in the greenhouse, have the movement pavilion, able to do yoga and so forth and meditation and be outside and just not be cooped up in a very lockdown facility that, you know, is very cold and clinical.
According to the release from PG&E, the Better Together Nature Positive Innovation Grant Program is awarded to organizations for, quote, leading efforts to preserve California's unique biodiversity, focusing on land, air quality, and water stewardship, end quote. Sorrel Leaf Healing Center is one of 5 organizations being awarded this grant for specifically supporting the Back Acres Eco-Cultural Restoration and Regenerative Agriculture Projects. Their programs will integrate ecosystem restoration into their model of healing, as well, through their construction of a culture camp and restoration of meadows on their land. Varga elaborates on what else the grant will be used for.
Yeah, PG&E gave us $100,000, and that will allow us to basically restore the meadow that we have. So our back acre, we have a meadow, riparian forest, wetlands, so that will help with that restoration. We'll also be able to do planting of native species. We'll be able to have riparian thinning, coppicing. We'll have pile burn, cultural burns as well. And the funds also help us develop a culture camp and about a quarter acre regenerative farm as well, that youth will have on opportunity to restore and do sustainable agriculture through climate smart practices, basically.
This grant is one of a few that the nonprofit has received for building their programs. Earlier this year, they received $750,000 in funding from the state to build their mental health campus, and were also awarded money through California Health Financing Authority, though still have not received the funds. The grant was awarded in June of last year.
So I'm a therapist as well, but I'm new to Humboldt County. I've only moved here February of this year, so it's not even a year I've been here in Humboldt and at Sorrel Leaf. I took over for the previous executive director, who was the founder. He's a pediatrician that now lives in Washington. That back in the day, he's a pediatrician here in Humboldt and realized that there was a need here in Humboldt as much as anywhere else. We have some of the highest ACEs scores, some of the highest suicide rates here for youth in Humboldt, Trinity, and the North Coast. That is, you know, a lot more than the rest of California. And so he realized, you know what, we have a gap in services. I'm going to go for these grants. So he reached out to the state, wrote these grants, did this amazing job to receive them. So we received the BSHIP grant, which is the Behavioral Health Continuum Structure grant that allowed us to purchase the land and do most of the construction. And we're still waiting to receive the CHAFA funds, which are the California Health Facilities Financing Authority, which they're way overdue. We still haven't received them, which is why we had to halt construction after using a lot of our own reserves to pay for construction the past couple months. And so we're hoping those funds will finally come from the state in the beginning of the year. And we also have foundations that have been very, you know, we have had Providence to, we've had private donors, we've had the Smullen Foundation that's helping us with our arts and admin, and a few other foundations that are going to be helping us with our courtyard planting of native plants and healing circles that is being finalized right now. And we have another, the McGuire state funding that will hopefully arrive at the beginning of the year to help us build the, finish building the arts and admin building. And then we have a foundation out of state that is providing for us to be able to build our movement pavilion, as well as some operational funds. And so there's been a lot of connection to the community, and the community has really stepped up, and the foundations and a few other nonprofits, Mad River's, you know, board of volunteers as well, has provided a donation this week. It's been just a work of art.
For more information about Sorrel Leaf Healing Center and what they do, the website is sorrelleaf.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.
Eureka City officials sent out a press release warning residents and businesses to stay watchful as a previous email scam resurfaced. It is targeting people that applied for city planning permits with fraudulent invoices. Eureka City Manager Miles Slattery spoke with KMUD News about the scam emails, explaining the scam and how residents can spot these fake emails and what to do if they were received.
This is the second time it's happened. A few months back, we had a similar situation. People are emailing folks fraudulent invoices and trying to get them to wire them money for application fees related to planning permits, whether it's conditional use permit or historical preservation permit or design review, whatever it may be. So this is the second time it's happened. We're only aware of one applicant during this recent round, and so that's when we sent out the press release to notify the public, and then we're also having staff notify any applicants that are on it. What they're doing is they're basically taking our notices, so we post our agendas. It's part of the Brown Act. We have to post our agendas prior to the meeting, and they're getting that information about who the applicant is, what the application is for, and then emailing them fraudulent invoices.
According to the press release, the fraudulent emails are being sent from planning.eurekaca@usa.com, which is not associated with the City of Eureka. All official City of Eureka emails end with @eurekaca.gov or @ci.eureka.ca.gov. Slattery explained that the big difference between these emails and the way the City of Eureka sends out invoices is not through email.
I think they're just looking at the attachments for the invoices, and they use our branding, and their invoice looks nothing like our invoice, but I could see people recognizing the branding and noticing that it's there. You know, our invoicing is done through online, and it's not done by an email where we send you and say, hey, you owe us this money.
For people that have had conversations through this email, Slattery recommended that they reach out to the Eureka Police Department immediately.
We've given this information to EPD. And they'll be following up. Difficult to track these people because of they're just looking for a routing number. There's not real any. They can generate as many different emails as they want. It's not like we can track them down, you know.
The last time this happened, a couple of months ago, the scammer was unable to be found, but the new scam emails are very similar to the previous scam. Slattery shared his suspicions and explained why it is so hard to catch the scammers.
We weren't able to track them down or anything, so we're the invoices that are being put together are very similar to the previous ones. So I'm no cop, but if I had to guess, it's likely the same group of people that are doing this. But yeah, we weren't able to, you know, track them down. It's very easy for them to stay incognito by doing this because there's no phone calls, there's no interactions. We have yet to have anybody that we're aware of that have delivered money to them. So we're not aware of anybody who's gone through this process. Been actually taken advantage of yet. I mean, obviously just the email in itself is disturbing, but we're not aware of anybody who's actually followed through and paid these folks.
If any Eureka residents have received this email, do not respond or provide payments. To verify invoices, contact the City of Eureka directly or the Development Service Department at 707-441-4160. If you have sent money or feel you have already been scammed, reach out to the City of Eureka Police Department at 707-441-4044. On Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, November 27th, Central del Pueblo will be hosting a table demonstration on the Eureka Courthouse steps from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. The protest is called Thanksgiving No. This is an annual event Central del Pueblo hosts where they will bring an empty table as a symbol of those who will not be with us at the Thanksgiving table. KMUD News talked to Brenda Perez, the executive director of Central del Pueblo. She shared the history of the demonstration and what this event means.
2019, Centro del Pueblo is having an empty table demonstration outside the courthouse as a statement of solidarity with many, many families that are separated due to immigration laws, either detention centers, deportation, harassment. Many families have an empty chair during Thanksgiving every year. And we want to honor that, and we want to bring that to the public space to bring awareness on what is happening. I believe the brutality of this year speaks by itself, but it's only our due to bring that other aspect of tradition versus what is happening with our families that have been separated.
Perez went into what is planned for this event.
The program includes bringing the names of people that have died in detention centers. It's an outrageous number of family members that have died under ICE facilities. Only this year, we have 24 people died, and during Biden administration, during the 4 years of the Biden administration, were the same amount or more, 26. So what we have here is a remembrance of them. We will kept a minute of silence honoring the transition. We will have some writing letters in solidarity. So if people want to come and write a statement, a message for those that have been incarcerated, they can come and do it. We will have some monarch butterfly wings around the table just to bring the memory of the free migrations. And we will have the presence of the Rapid Response Network team as well. So at some point of the program, we will mention our basic rights in case of ISIS coming to Humboldt.
The importance of the table is to remember different families that have had family members deported.
We have talked with many different families that have one person deported, either the husband, the father, the grandfather, grandmother deported. And they live in an empty chair at the table. It's trauma that doesn't heal with anything. Throughout the years, we've been learning from these families how is to live between two countries, how is to be experiencing this forced separation, these distances. And again, the empty chair to the table comes as a constant reminder to them of the injustice that families live here in the United States. For this Thanksgiving, I know many families reunited, gathered around food, remembrance and memories. But there are many, many families here in Humboldt County that have an empty chair at the table and that are generous enough to share with us their pain. And that pain we want to transform and we want to brought to all of the people that are thinking how to support the immigrant communities. They need to know we live under trauma and family separation.
Perez said this is a peaceful protest and a demonstration in solidarity.
This is a peaceful protest. This is a peaceful demonstration of solidarity. We're going to have materials to write and draw. We invite musicians, people for the open mic that want to speak out, talk about their own experiences with migrants here in Humboldt County or being a migrant here in Humboldt County. And people should know that we've been doing this since 2019. Every year during Thanksgiving at noon, we bring our table and our empty chairs, and we bring what is happening to the immigrant community and hasn't stopped happening to the immigrant community.
Perez is not expecting a giant turnout because it is Thanksgiving, but invited everyone to come out and learn about the Rapid Response Network and the importance of it to smaller remote areas.
I want to invite the community of South Humboldt particularly to join the efforts of the Rapid Response Network. We want to include all the territory from south to north of Humboldt County. We are doing a great effort to have covered the main cities, but we need help in the mountains. We need help where people is more vulnerable, where their workplaces are. So please join the Rapid Response Network. And if you see ICE in town, call the hotline at 707-200-8091. Join tomorrow. Join for all of us. Join for peace. And join against the brutality of immigration during these times.
For more information, go to their website or social media at Central del Pueblo, or send a text message to 707-683-5293. In national news, Zelensky ready to meet with Trump to discuss revised U.S. peace plan for Ukraine. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
When President Donald Trump unveiled his plan to end the war in Ukraine last week, it was roundly criticized by Ukraine, European leaders, and other Ukraine supporters as biased in favor of Russia. Some even called the peace proposal a plan for Ukraine's surrender, with land to be ceded to Russia and limits on Ukraine's military. Some reports even said the original draft was written in Russian. But now that proposal has been amended, or in President Donald Trump's terms, fine-tuned. Keir Starmer is Britain's prime minister.
I do think we're moving in a positive direction, and indications today that in large part the majority of the text looks as though Vladimir is indicating can be accepted.
President Trump took time out from a White House Thanksgiving turkey ceremony to share his opinion on the deal and on his own peacemaking skills.
I've also ended 8 wars in 9 months, and we're working on that final war. It's not easy, but I don't know. I think we're going to get there. 25,000 soldiers, Ukraine, Russia. In the last month, 25,000 soldiers have died. So I think we're getting very close to a deal. We'll find out. I thought that one would have been gone quicker. We did 8. I thought that would have been an easier one, but I think we're making progress.
One of the Ukrainian delegates at peace talks in Geneva, Oleksandr Bevs, says the number of points in the U.S. plan, originally 28, was reduced to 19 points, adding that some points on Russia-U.S. relations were excluded.
The document that was presented to Ukraine and discussed in Geneva was significantly transformed, and it reflects a lot of things that Ukraine wanted to put there, or to change, or to exclude from this plan. But there is no final draft. It's important to understand that the final decision and approval will be taken by the president. And it's really so because there are some points that are exclusive competence of the president, and the delegation was not authorized to say this final version okay. So I think the process is still ongoing, and it's very premature to say that something is agreed upon.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said late Monday that the list of steps to end the war can now, in his words, become workable.
And I'm ready to meet with President Trump. And there are sensitive points to discuss. We have them still. And we think that the presence of European leaders could be helpful.
As talks were going on, Russia launched attacks on Ukraine's capital, killing 7 people. Ukraine responded with drone attacks on Russian aviation, drone, and oil facilities. European leaders warned that the road to peace will be long. Meanwhile, President Zelensky says we must protect lives, strengthen air defense, and hold the front line.
As long as Russia has not taken real steps toward demobilization, real steps to shut down its war machine, steps that would clearly show that Russia is serious about ending this war of aggression, we do not have the right to stop working to support Ukraine, to support our people, and to support our collective security. And we do not have the right to demobilize ourselves.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Bipartisan bill in House of Representatives would create grant program to boost safety in public transit. KPFE's Scott Baba reports.
A new bill introduced in the House would create a federal grant program to boost crime prevention and security efforts at public transportation systems, as well as require a study of transit agency anti-crime practices. Called the Safe and Affordable Transit Act and co-authored by Democratic Representative Laura Friedman of California and Republican Representative Nicole Malliotakis of New York, the bill would be the first federal program to put money directly into making public transit safer. Representative Friedman unveiled the new bill at the Burbank Airport Metrolink station.
This bill is simple, but it's exactly what we need. It creates a brand new federal grant program that doesn't currently exist. And this program is set up to help local transit agencies hire more officers for stations and vehicles, and to make physical upgrades that protect operators and passengers alike. And those would be upgrades like security cameras, shields, and visibility improvements. This is about giving people confidence so that every family can feel safe riding transit. And it's about taking the burden off of local taxpayers and transit systems who right now have to fund officers and safety improvements out of their general funds.
The measure would amend federal transportation law to authorize up to $50 million a year in operating grants for urban transit systems from 2026 through 2030. Democratic State Assembly member Nick Schultz of Burbank, who chairs the Assembly's Committee on Public Safety, said he understands residents want to rely on public transportation and that California has worked to make transit safer and more accessible. But more help is still needed.
For the last year, we have been talking about the prevalence of assaults on our public transit, the threats that are posed to our transit operators and riders alike. And certainly there is discussion to be had in bills that we're advancing in the state capitol to step up the punishments and to deter this sort of behavior on our public transit systems. But it's also important that we have the infrastructure investment to change how transit operates, to build the infrastructure to have a safer experience for both transit operator and rider.
The bill also directs the Transportation Secretary to commission a study by the Transportation Research Board to evaluate crime prevention strategies used by transit agencies, identify successful and unsuccessful tactics, and develop best practices for deterring crime in public transportation systems. Donald Graham, a Los Angeles Police Department deputy chief and commanding officer of the agency's Transit Services Bureau, said the department has seen a significant reduction in crime on the region's transit system over the past year and hopes the bill will help the department to share and build on that progress.
I think everybody up here at this podium is dedicated to the idea that a person's access to transportation defines the size of their world. Our job is to make sure that that access is safe.
The legislation is now pending referral to committee. I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez and Brian Bull reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation Council is considering a motion to remove the tribe's president, Boo Nigrin, and Vice President Rochelle Montoya after a special prosecutor accused Nigrin of misusing government funds. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the council could have taken action as early as Thursday until a judge in Window Rock, Arizona, stepped in.
Council Speaker Crystalyn Curley sponsored the bill to oust the pair. Nigrin has accused Curley of seeking his removal so she can take his place.
All I can say, this is not a political move on my part. This is a necessary step to protect our nation's financial stability.
Two-thirds of the 24-member council must approve, and it's unclear whether Curley has the votes. On Friday, she released 465 pages detailing allegations and hope for a swift vote while acknowledging that delegates needed time to examine the evidence.
Given the complexity of the issue, the number of alleged violations and the volume of documents involved, pretty sure that a vote before Thanksgiving is very unlikely. A more realistic timeline would be after the holiday.
That timeline changed Tuesday when a judge granted a motion from Nygren's attorneys to block the bill pending a hearing next month. As for Vice President Montoya, who was elected independently from Nygren, she denies involvement with any of his alleged violations and says he stripped her duties, resources, and budget. One invoice documented a $3,000 loan for travel expenses Nygren said he needed because of an argument with his wife, Apache County Attorney Jasmine Blackwater Nygren. He also spent $3,000 renovating his Apache County home and borrowed nearly $1,200 renting tables and chairs for his daughter's birthday party. Another $6,000 went directly to his then chief of staff, Patrick Sandoval, to cover car repairs. Sandoval also got a loan to gift Nygren a $1,500 birthday present. It's unclear, according to the receipts, whether anything has been paid back. When asked, Nygren's staff reiterated he would not comment on any specifics. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatrazio.
This year, five Native Americans were among 29 people named Bush Fellows. The Bush Fellowship provides up to $150,000 over 2 years for fellows to build on their leadership skills. In the third of five profiles, Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire highlights an Oglala Lakota advocate for the arts and boosting financial support for creative Natives.
Laurie Puyer has been active in the arts for decades, but beyond making art, she also wanted to find ways to make it sustainable within tribal communities. When Puyer became active with the First Peoples Fund in 1999, she coordinated research into the arts in Native communities, particularly the Pine Ridge Reservation.
And through that research, we found that 71% of the households were engaged in some sort of tradition-based, home-based business, but 52% of that household was tradition forms of art. So that's how the Rolling Res Arts bus was born, because we were seeing the needs for artists and then being in a community the size of Pine Ridge. It was hard for artists to get to our training workshops, and we'd partner with Lakota Funds, which is a loan fund. And it was really our artist idea.
The Rolling Res Arts bus has traveled 8,000 miles across the Pine Ridge and Cheyenne River reservations and even visited the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock. It also doubles as a mobile bank and teaches Native artists about running a business and accessing credit and capital. Puyer says she'll use her Bush Fellowship to explore socially responsible ways to invest in Native artists that align with cultural values. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Nat Cardos, Christopher Martinez, Scott Bava, Brian Bull, and Antonio Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.